Welcome back to another edition of The Short Coat, a podcast of wit and wisdom from the students at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. I'm Dave Ettler. This week we're doing a segment we like to call The Short Couch. Medical student Natalie Ramirez and University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics psychiatrist Jody Tate join us to talk about the stress that medical students face as they begin medical school and what they can do to take the edge off. Natalie?
Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Dr. Tate.
You're welcome.
How are you doing today?
Good. Good.
Excellent. So I've decided to break this up into two segments. The first part is going to be where we answer a few questions from the M1s that medical student Miriam Wiener collected for us at the student organization fair. And then the second part is just going to be an interrogation of your psychiatric knowledge. So, all right, Dave, how about the first question?
Well, I'm Tyler, and one of my things is like, all you hear from everyone outside of the medical school community is like, oh, it's so hard, oh my gosh, all these like overwhelming comments. And so for me, it was like balancing that, you know, it's going to be okay thing with all these other comments that are like, it's so terrible, you know, you're going to struggle and all that stuff. So one of my worries was coming here and then, you know, either facing more of that or having like a supportive environment and stuff like that. So,
all right, that's a good question, Tyler. Thanks. So Dr. Tate, any thoughts?
Well, I agree. That is always what I think students hear, and I sure heard and continue to hear from not only those folks that are outside the community, but inside the medical community too. And I think, you know, medical school and residency and life, living a life as a physician is, you know, a challenging profession. But I think there's a lot of things that one can do to maintain balance and to get support. I think the Carver College of Medicine provides a lot of support to students, and I have been so impressed by the amount of support that's available through the dean, through the communities, through the counseling center, just through your colleagues and your friends and teachers. And so I think it's a very supportive place to be a student. That doesn't mean it's not going to be hard, not going to be challenging, but I think when you get support and you try to keep things in perspective and try to maintain some balance, it's definitely doable. And I think what you'll find is some of your greatest memories are going to be from those medical student years when you're all suffering together.
Nice. I'm sure you've got balance down, right?
Yeah, I got it completely down, yeah.
Awesome. All right, well, that was a good first question. How about the next one?
Okay, how do you maintain a healthy balance between schoolwork and your friends and your family and your friends from your undergrad and all those different relationships? How do you just balance those on top of the strenuous classwork of med school?
All right, so I think we're hearing a pattern. Kind of funny. We edited out a bunch of questions actually on anatomy lab because we figured we had a psychiatrist and a future psychiatrist. And
no anatomy, please.
What would we really know?
Nose, eyes.
Yeah, exactly. Like liver, maybe. Okay, so a bit of the same. And I guess I was just going to ask maybe more than about how do you maintain that perspective? I feel like that's something important that you just said.
Mm-hmm. Perspective. Well, still to this day, I'm still working on that, but I think I usually do a fairly decent job of that. But I think when you only spend your life inside the medical community, you can lose perspective. So I think an important part for those of us in medicine is to have contacts and friends that are outside the medical community, so you can kind of get an outside glimpse of what it's like to be inside. But I think also maintaining balance is a very important way to maintain perspective and balance through exercising, through, you know, before exercising, sleeping and eating and getting your basic needs met are very important to, I think, maintain perspective and maintain balance. If you mm-hmm. spend every waking hour studying and then you get like 2 hours of sleep and then drink a whole bunch of caffeine and then study some more, you're going to lose perspective and you're going to lose balance and it's not going to go well.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the first year and second year are kind of where you're most at risk for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really
Definitely.
Easy to just sort of lock yourself in a room and study and ignore your social life, become kind of unidimensional.
Right, absolutely.
You know, so yeah, you're absolutely right. Doing that whole exercise, eating, sleeping thing, it's so easy to kind of let go of.
And it sounds so simple to do those things, but I think it's actually pretty difficult sometimes to make sure to mm-hmm. get enough sleep and to eat and to exercise. And I, long before I was a psychiatrist, I remember my high school math teacher said something about, you know, past 10 o'clock at night, she really can't get anything done that's worthwhile, so she just goes to bed and figures she'll wake up early and then get things done the next day. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, that if you're not getting that sleep, then what you're doing really isn't making any difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true, and it tends to lead to a bit of anxiety, which, you know, I'm sure medical students are totally calm all the time.
Yes, right, of course.
What do you think about that, though? I mean, I guess there's, you know, issues of depression, anxiety, but anxiety, I feel like we actually don't speak to as much, and it can lead to depression,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and so, I mean, obviously self-care is a really important part of keeping that mm-hmm. at bay. Do you have any other advice about dealing with just feelings of anxiety?
Yeah, I think, you know, most medical students are overachievers and, you know, want to be number one. And then you get into a group of people that everyone was used to being number one. And so I think there's that tendency to feel really anxious about that and be really hard on themselves and beat themselves up when they're not, you know, reaching the certain levels of success or expectations that they set their sights on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's really important, again, to maintain that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes anxiety can get to a point where you're not able to kind of get outside of it. You're not able to maintain some perspective, and you might need help to do that. And so when anxiety gets to the point where, you know, you're not able to sleep because of it, you're not able to concentrate because of it, it's really interfering with your life, then I think that, you know, getting help, whether it's through counseling or whether it's through medications, can be very important to do. And there's a medical student counseling center here at the college that has two excellent psychologists. There's a psychiatrist that works through that counseling center. And a long time ago, I used to be that psychiatrist, but I'm not anymore. But so I worked a lot with medical students. And it's a tough road, but there is help out there. And sometimes anxiety is a normal reaction to a stressful situation, and sometimes it's above and beyond that. And people need therapy and or medications.
Mm-hmm. Jody, if I can interject, what role, you mentioned there's help out there, and I assume that one of those sources of help could be friends and family.
Correct.
And that's one of the things that this questioner focused on was, you know, how to maintain the interactions with their friends and family. And that made me think of, you know, what role can friends and family play in helping a student not be crazy
mm-hmm.
about their medical school time.
Right. Well, I think maintaining that contact is the first step. And I think that, you know, when you're in medical school, it's really easy to spend all your time studying and only interact with your medical school friends and you know, forget those contacts outside of medical school. So maintaining those relationships. But I think what family and friends can do is be supportive, listen, but also maybe challenge your friend or loved one on some of their thought process that might be a little distorted, and kind of bring them back into reality sometimes. So I think those are things that family and friends can do. Yeah.
One of the things I learned from my wife was that I don't have to offer solutions to problems. I just have to listen. Sometimes
right.
That's pretty valuable.
Listening and validating. And I also think that we think if we validate someone's feelings, that means we're agreeing with them. And that's not necessarily the case. You can just let that person know that they're being heard. And you could think everything they're saying is completely wrong, but you're still making them feel like they're being heard, and that's really important for all of
us. Yeah. Dave, I'm glad someone taught you how to talk to women.
Hey. It's worked out well.
All right, so I kind of have a few questions mm-hmm. here now, and they're really not that hard, so don't worry.
Oh, good, good. I get nervous, too, and anxious. And
Oh, but the first one here really is, do you think it's kind of difficult maybe to tease out depression versus just sort of being a normal, overworked, sleep-deprived medical student? I mean, because you look at the depression criteria, you know, like, mm-hmm. I'm not sleeping, I'm not eating, or I'm eating too much, I can't concentrate. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of that just sounds kind of normal for mm-hmm. us. Mm-hmm. What's the difference, you think?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes that can be, you know, tricky to figure out. And you know, for you medical students out there, that mnemonic, Siggy CAPS, you know, those are all the symptoms of depression. Well, for starters, it's important to figure out other things that could be contributing. If somebody's having problems with sleep and appetite and concentration, are they drinking too much alcohol to cope with what's going on? Are they drinking too many Red Bulls and Starbucks and Mountain Dews during the day, and they're feeling more anxious and more depressed and can't sleep and can't concentrate because they're too jazzed up? So those are really important things to kind of tweak out when somebody's coming with depressive symptoms, mm-hmm. because alcohol and drug problems are a big problem for all of us. We're at increased risk for abusing alcohol and drugs, and so that's something we need to pay close attention to. Mm-hmm. But when somebody has a depression that is kind of above and beyond the normal stress of medical school, the things you want to really pay close attention to are suicidal thoughts okay. of wanting to kill yourself, thoughts of, you know, just really not be interested in doing anything. I mean, many of us, when we're stressed and overwhelmed and overworked, we're like, gosh, if only I could have a day off, I could go skiing or I could go do this, but I can't because I have to study. Mm-hmm. So when those things are gone, like, there's no interest in doing things, people don't care about any other interests, or they're not keeping their hygiene up. You know, they're not showering, they're not brushing their teeth just because they don't care. Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of things that really kind of push it over more into a syndrome of depression.
Okay. And what do you think of maybe also sort of those intrusive thoughts of worthlessness?
Yeah, feelings of guilt and worthlessness. And sometimes that can be kind of tricky with medical students, because I think that those of us in medicine sometimes tend to be a little harder on ourselves and think, oh, if we got a B- on that test, we're just an awful person. We're failing. We're never going to, you know, survive. And so I think that we have to kind of tweak those out from maybe a, you know, high expectations versus really ruminative feelings of guilt and worthlessness. But those, mm-hmm. you're absolutely right, are things that we want to ask questions about and kind of get to the bottom of.
Yeah, just kind of keep tabs on that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. One more question, actually, before we head into a break. I was going to ask you, what about those who, you know, maybe correctly or just sort of incorrectly find themselves deeply questioning this path somewhere along the way? I mean, I think mm-hmm. this is something that could really apply to an M1, M2, M3, whatever, M4. Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
too late. Know, too late.
Exactly.
No. You're just kidding, M4.
I can tell you it happens.
It does.
Oh, God, Dave.
No, I think you're all set. But.
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, it happens. So, I mean, how do you help people deal with that uncertainty?
You know?
Because at some point, we just kind of got to go with it. And it's a little harder, too, when you're like, oh, God, I'm like 150, 200 grand in debt. Like, what am I doing?
Yeah. I remember in medical school, I wanted to quit and become a farmer. Of course, I've never farmed before. I think that's something that, you know, most medical students, residents, and sometimes physicians go through questioning their career choice. Uh-huh. And I don't think that's unique to medicine. But I think what's important to do is to not make any rash decisions, to talk about those feelings, to process those feelings, let them be for a while, and see if they continue to be there. And some people decide that medicine just really isn't for them. I have, you know, a handful of friends that decided that medicine wasn't for them, and they're very happy in their other career choice. But I think, don't make a rash decision. Mm-hmm. Make sure you talk with other people, give it time. Make sure you're sleeping and eating, because if you're not sleeping and eating, you can't really make any good decision. But time, I think time is the important factor there.
Okay.
Maybe also, I mean, one of the things I have a family friend who was a physician. I can't remember what kind, because this is when I was younger, but he's a I think some sort of general practice physician. Mm-hmm. And he decided mid-career to go back to residency and become a radiologist. And maybe that sort of points out the fact that, you know, the path that you've chosen isn't the only path that you can choose among medicine.
Right.
Maybe it's refocusing.
Point. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's so many things you can do in medicine. If you decide, you know, oh, I feel like I really can't provide good patient care anymore. There's so many education, administration, insurance. Yeah. I mean, so many different paths you can do, or even outside of the whole field that you can still use your skills. So you're never stuck.
Exactly. I feel like it kind of goes back to maintaining perspective, like you said.
Absolutely.
You know, just sort of remembering not much is very permanent.
Right. There's always opportunities.
Great. All right, well, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Well, we're here today with Denny Porto, editor-in-chief of the Vital Signs student newspaper, a segment that will become a regular feature, hopefully, from here on out. Denny, what do you got for us?
Hot off the presses, we have our very first issue of Volume 47 for the new school year.
Wow.
It should be here in time for all the new M1s coming in later in August.
What are you covering in this issue? What are we talking about?
Well, we cover things that should be of interest to all the different classes. First, we have our very first annual AOA-sponsored rotation guide for all the M3s out there.
What's AOA?
Oh, it's the Honor Medical Society for all the really smart kids that got good grades in their third and fourth year. So.
Is that like Alpha, Omega, Alpha?
Exactly, yes. And so they have, you can get trusted advice from them. And they go, each rotation they go through and they offer their advice and just kind of the basics and background on each rotation. And I think it's your secret to success. So check out your mailbox for that. And then also we have an article by a fourth year medical student, Asita Jayawardena. And he just was recently given an award by the New England Journal of Medicine for an essay he wrote about the Ponseti method and how the internet helped bring about widespread acclaim of the Ponseti method.
Yeah.
And we have an article by him and a picture as well.
You know what's cool about that is Asita was a guest on our show, a few shows ago. Anyway, go to our website and check it out because he talked about, he interviewed a gentleman from India who was working to set up the Ponseti method there, and it was a pretty interesting topic. So read up on that in the Vital Signs, and then listen to the show. It was cool.
And also in the text of the article for Vital Signs, he gives a link to his original essay that was the award winner, and I recommend going back to read that as well.
Excellent.
And then finally we have a couple of photographs by L. Wern Ong, and just something there to take your mind off medicine for a while if you're flipping through Vital Signs. So
awesome.
That's our first issue of the year, 8 pages all together.
So, 8 pages.
Yeah. So it's a lot of reading.
That's a big issue for.
Yeah, it's one of the best, if you don't mind me saying.
All right. Sweet. What else?
Well, just Vital Signs in general. If you haven't heard of us before, especially if you're a new first-year medical student, we're the student newspaper at the University of Iowa. We've been around for almost 50 years, and this is an exciting organization to be a part of. Not to falsely motivate you, but it will look excellent on your residency applications off in the future. And it is something that you should definitely get involved with, and we're hoping to get new young talent involved with it if you're interested.
So what kind of talent? Are you looking for editors? Are you looking for writers? What are you looking for?
I think editors would be very welcome. We have one in addition to me right now, and I think it's a great job. You're the one that gets to sort through all the different submissions and kind of request submissions and put together the Vital Signs. Also, if you ever want to submit an article or photographs or some kind of artwork that you're interested in, that is also an option. And you can email me, dennis-porto@uiowa.edu with any of those submissions.
Awesome. Are you planning some sort of web presence? Is this going to be on the web somewhere?
Yeah, we're kind of making a transition from, it's very expensive to print a student newspaper, so we're kind of making a transition to more of a, maybe a blog-based Vital Signs presence, and it's an exciting transition, and that one that you want to be a part of.
So stay tuned for that. I'm sure we'll hear more about that as the
year. Yeah, more details to come.
As the fall goes forward. Well, all right. Anything else?
Nothing comes to mind.
All right. Well, thanks for coming by. Good luck with Vital Signs for the year, and we'll talk to you next time.
Hi, We're back from our break, and I still have Dr. Jody Tate here today.
And hello.
Again.
Excellent. So we're going to move on with some more questions here, and I think I kind of want to go in this direction of stigma, mental health and stigma, because, I mean, it's, you know, of course, has stigma, I think, within the general population, but in particular, I feel like the medical community kind of has its own sort of different doctor, heal thyself kind of culture that makes it even harder for med students or residents or even physicians to seek help. What do you think we can do to better normalize, you know, seeking help?
Yeah, that is there. I mean, that stigma about not only with mental illness, but, you know, our physical health. And, you know, you see doctors saying, hey, my kid has an ear infection. Can you give me some antibiotics or I'll just write my prescription for my kid? So, you know, I don't have the exact answer for that, but it's very important. It's something I'm very passionate about, and I'm involved with a lot of medical student education, and I think it's really important to start with you guys, the medical students, to, you know, first of all, understand that mental illness is just like any other illness. Your brain is sick, just like when you're, you know, have diabetes, your pancreas is sick or your pancreas isn't working right. And, you know, most important thing is to get help and get, you know, your body working the right way. Mm-hmm. And so seeing a psychiatrist or seeing a therapist is no different than seeing a internist or seeing an endocrinologist. And so I think it has to start with you guys. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to continue to work with residents and work with other physicians. And you know, I've had friends who are doctors ask me if I would prescribe a med off the record for them. And I've said no. Mm-hmm. So I think we also need to not kind of enable our friends who are physicians or other, you know, mental health professionals and, you know, call people on it. Because I think the only way we're going to change is if we also change our behavior. And not just with psychiatric illnesses, but with all illnesses, that we need to have our own primary care provider, and we should not be getting curbside. Thank you, from our colleagues, because that's not good medical care.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and so you kind of alluded to this, but I guess there are concerns of professional repercussions. I assume that's why people would want to keep it under the table or whatever. Do you think that those are legitimate concerns, or?
I get why people are concerned, but I don't think they're legitimate concerns. So I like I said, used to see a lot of medical students, and because of my role in medical student education, I don't see medical students as patients anymore, but I see residents and physicians, and I've seen quite a few residents that, because of their mental illness, have been involved with kind of a monitoring system through the Iowa board, where essentially, you know, I have to fill out a piece of paper every 4 times a year saying that how they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think residents don't like that because it feels like, oh, you know, somebody's looking over their shoulder. But the system is put into place to actually help those residents and to make sure that they're taking care of themselves and make sure that they're getting the help that they need. And in not one case, and I've seen quite a few residents on this program, has it hindered their career. And in fact, it's helped their career because it's helped them, you know, to be the best that they could be and make sure their mental illness was under good control and to be good doctors. And so I think that that fear is out there, but I don't think that it's I don't think it's something that people should fear.
Okay.
It's another piece of paper you got to fill out, which is a pain when you're a really busy resident, but it has not hurt their careers at all. And I think it's improved their ability to be good physicians.
Good, good. And maybe hopefully ending on a happy note, have there been physicians that you've known and respected who've sought treatment for depression or anxiety or any mental health issue and have really done well, moved on?
Absolutely, yeah. I have quite a few friends who have had depression or anxiety. I have one friend who has bipolar affective disorder who's done quite well, quite successful. Substance abuse, absolutely. I know quite a few, well, physicians, and I'm just talking about psychiatrists, but I know many physicians with mental health issues who are very successful, and you know, you would never in a million years guess that they have a mental illness. And that's one thing I guess I want to say too, that I think, you know, there's this stigma that's like, oh, well, they're crazy, or, oh, you can tell, you know, people with mental illness just look like people without mental illness. They're just human beings that have an illness. And so, you know, there's no reason why it should impair your ability to be an excellent physician.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Very optimistic there. So this is kind of my own little tidbit at the end. I was wondering, this is a question for the listeners, if students would be at all interested in some type of anonymous online forum for just sort of talking about symptoms of depression or things like that. The idea is not really my own. Apparently the University, or Duke University School of Medicine, had tried back in 2005 a online forum where postings were put up by students just about how they were feeling, and it was reviewed by a psychiatrist. And they kind of moved forward from there with, you know, what they thought student needs were. And it looked like in about, I think, 10 days, they received 100 postings and more than 1,000 hits of students just talking about their concerns. And it really seemed to help to normalize and validate how they were doing. So if you are interested, or if you think that's something that we could do, Dave's going to leave some contact information at the end of this podcast, and you can go ahead and give us your thoughts. All right, so again, thank you, Dr. Tate.
And
thank you,
pleasure.
Dave. Thank you, Dave, for chiming in today. And for taking the time to do this, we really appreciate it. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Hope you have a good day.
Thanks for listening to The Short Code. The Short Code is produced by the Writing and Humanities Program at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine, with support from Medical Student Government. You can visit us online at theshortcode.com, or you can find us on Facebook. We take comments and story ideas from you, our listeners, at theshortcoats@gmail.com. Or leave us a message at 347-SHORT-CT. That's 347-746-7828. That's also where you can leave a question for Natalie's advice segment, The Short Couch. Our theme music is by Revolution Void from their album Increase the Dosage. Find them at www.revolutionvoid.com.